Hey guys, welcome to the B-Sides. I'm Eric, your host, and today for our guests we have Michelle. Hey Michelle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So do you think you could give us a top, I originally said top three snacks of all time, but can you give me a top five? Or maybe like what medley would be the best? Because, you know, you can't have one snack by itself. So let's just go top three snacks of all time.
Top three?
I told you I wouldn't give you any hard
questions.
Okay, well,
I also think, I think way too deeply about questions, but I'll just try and, I also have phases for snacks.
Yeah.
So it's not always like consistent. I would say currently, that's hard. Like I always need like a balance. Like I feel like there has to be like a sweet snack and then also like a savory snack.
Of course.
I would say I've been eating a lot of purple Doritos lately.
Purple, is that the I forgot the flavor.
I don't even know.
Yeah, purple Doritos. That's a good definition.
I actually don't like any other Doritos.
Purple Doritos.
Is that a hot take? I don't know.
That's a little bit of a hot take.
Yeah, so that, and then I would say like
that's your savory.
Yeah, and then for like my sweeter snack, I'm really into like the Whole Foods like brown butter chocolate chip cookie these days. So it's
pretty good. Not eating those together, right?
No.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like depends on the
Once you get your balance in. Okay, that's two. What about a third one?
I used to not like beef jerky or like beef sticks, but I've been eating more of those lately. I feel like it's just
like the Costco ones or just
like the Chomps.
Okay, I have no idea, honestly. Hey, if Chomps wants to sponsor us, though, I wouldn't be opposed. I don't know. I don't know how to go through CCPC for those two. That'd be interesting if I get an email like, "Hey, we'd like to sponsor you." I'm like, okay. Give us money. Anyway, sorry. This is me just spitballing.
I would like that.
We also hear that you pretty into Korean dramas, is that right? Is there anyone that you're watching right now that you're really enjoying?
I recently watched the When Life Gives You Tangerines.
Okay. I have no idea about any Korean drama. Can you give us like a really brief overview about what this show's about?
I would say it's kind of it's just like about life. And I feel like it's very specific to the natives of Jeju Island in Korea.
So I feel like
it's like not the typical like Korean, I guess, life that a lot of us have lived or like our parents have lived. But I think it just ties in the struggles of family relationships and like the hardships of poverty. And I don't know. I think it's just a good, or it gave me good perspective on like, oh, maybe this is what my parents felt or like the emotions that they might have felt. So I think I cried like every single episode.
That was my next question. I hear it's a tearjerker.
Yeah.
It's like one of the most tear-jerking, is that a word? shows that you've ever watched. And that makes it more enjoyable to watch.
Like, it's not like I like crying, but I think it's more so like, I don't know. I just don't think it's like rare to find that type of drama where like it's more about life. And usually it's like unrealistic of like, oh, there's like a rich CEO and he likes a poor girl or like something like that. But yeah, I don't know. I think I like those like more realistic, just like about human life and how human relationships work, like that type of drama.
Gotcha. Well, what's your favorite Korean drama of all time?
I always watch or rewatch Reply 1988 every fall because it's like a really good like nostalgic fall winter type of drama. So that might be my favorite. I don't know if I can say I have like one favorite.
Are you the type to rewatch shows a lot?
If I really like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's on the short list of shows that you
I'm a big fan of Criminal Minds. So I've watched Criminal Minds like so many times.
Criminal Minds and then Reply. Really similar.
Yeah. I would say I have like diverse tastes, I think. I'm not like too picky. I'm not really into like sci-fi or like fantasy. So like I've never watched like Game of Thrones, that kind of stuff. But I think I really like action or like mystery. What's another one I rewatched? I don't know.
Yeah. No, like Office or Friends.
Oh yeah, I like The Office.
Okay.
Yeah.
Enough to rewatch? Or?
Yeah, I would rewatch it. I really like Michael Scott.
Gotcha. But TV shows are over movies or?
Oh, I don't think I can choose one.
Okay. That might be the hardest hitting question I'll ask you.
Yeah, that one's pretty hard.
Yeah, I don't think. Fair enough. Did you end up coming up with a hot take for yourself?
I think this hot take just relates to me, but I think Diet Coke tastes better than regular or Coke Zero.
So, okay. Well, yeah. That's definitely a hot take. That's definitely something I know of you. But what do you think, that's just because you drank Diet Coke your entire life? Or
I actually didn't drink it my entire life.
Oh, wow. So you just natively chose Diet Coke.
Yeah. I don't know how I got to Diet Coke, but we somehow got there. And we've been going strong ever since. So.
What about Pepsi or Diet Pepsi? Is it the same?
I don't really drink Pepsi. Like, I never reached for it, I guess.
Dang. So have you ever asked for a Diet Coke at a restaurant and they give you Coke Zero and you're like, get this out of my face?
I can tell the difference.
Wow. Good, good. Have you done, you said you did a blind taste test once. And
yeah, we did like a girls' like cabin trip in January. And we did like a blind taste test of like Coke Zero and Diet Coke, and I got it right every single time.
Wow. Wow. Was there different varieties or was it just Coke?
I think it was Coke just Zero, the two.
Gotcha.
I think it's just the two.
What do you think makes Diet Coke taste better for you then? Or better? Maybe it's not even taste.
I also think it's like Diet Coke gets kind of flat quickly, but like that initial sip is just too
crisp.
Good. It's just too good.
Yeah. Aspartame.
It's too good.
When the aspartame hits your tongue, wow, it really just is different.
And like the back of your throat is burning and you're like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
That must suck because I'm sure a lot of, when you go places or like friends' houses, they probably will not have Diet Coke. So will you like acquiesce and just like, okay, fine, I'll drink Coke Zero. Like, yeah, I'd rather not drink anything at all. Give me a water.
Oh no, I think I'll drink, if I'm desperate enough, I think I'll drink Coke Zero. If there's regular Coke, I probably won't choose it. Just because, like, knowing how much sugar is in there. Not that aspartame is any better than all of the sugar that's in there, but yeah.
Dang, the Coke company probably hates you because they put so much money into making sure Coke Zero would be the number one. They're like, here you are, just drinking your Diet Coke all this time later. Yeah, but Michelle, I'm gonna out you a bit because I heard you're also a very prolific singer. I've heard you sing.
No,
so was your singing career only throughout college, or did you sing for your youth group as well?
I went to like a really small church growing up, so I was kind of like forced into the position.
Gotcha.
So I did praise team in high school and then moved into praise team in college.
Gotcha. And we have a recording that we're gonna play right.
No.
Going to college, did you really you led the praise team for a while, right? But when you're in college,
only 1 year.
Just 1 year?
Yeah.
Do you think that was a difficult time for you, or was it just kind of in line with you kind of singing?
Yeah, I think it was probably the most difficult ministry I've been a part of.
Oh, wow, really? What's hard about it?
Being a leader.
Okay, fair.
I think that's really hard. Yeah, just the fact that we also had a lot of members on praise team. And for me, I don't really play any other instruments. Like I'd occasionally play guitar or like, yeah, I don't even play keys. So I guess it's just guitar. But because of that, like, I couldn't really give advice or, like, tips on any other type of instrument. So I think that was hard, of just, like, knowing the balance between all the instruments. Like, how, I don't know a thing about sound.
Sure.
So all of those things were kind of hard. And also, I think the demands of all of these different perspectives and trying to please everyone was kind of difficult.
Gotcha.
So I think that's why, like, I really appreciated my co-leader at the time and how we always kind of reminded each other to go back to the vision that we started with.
Do you think that experience made it you more confident in kind of leading in the future, or was it tough and it, yeah?
I don't know if I can say it made me more confident, but I think I became more knowledgeable.
Yeah. What's one takeaway you think you took out of it? People are hard to manage.
No, that is true. But I think it's, you need to have a purpose. Yeah. And you need to always go back to that purpose.
Did you ever feel like you were without purpose and then you had to recenter? Or was that always something on the forefront of your mind?
I think my co-leader was really good about, okay, we're going to create like a vision statement and we're going to stick to it, of like, what do we really want to focus on for this 1 year that we're serving together? And then sometimes we would be led astray. I think just because people like to voice their opinions, whether you want to hear it or not. So I think you just get influenced by all these things. But to kind of go back, like be able to take a step back and think like, oh, but does this align with the conviction that God gave us initially when we started serving together. Mm-hmm. I think that helped to kind of recenter.
Gotcha, gotcha. Makes sense. And hopefully you join the praise team though. For now, kind of switching into our next gear. Well, I know, Michelle, that you're a teacher now. Mm-hmm. What got you into teaching to begin with in the first place?
I'm bad at math and science, so I knew med was not for me. I liked reading, writing, history a lot. So I don't really know how that ties into teaching, but I think growing up, I also served at VBS a lot. So I was around younger children, and I think it was kind of maybe I'll just try it out. So in high school, I did a Teachers for Tomorrow teaching program. Mm. Where you can go to local elementary schools in the area and just kind of see be in the classroom, gain some experience of just being out in the field. And I think it was that experience where I was maybe I do helping kids learn. And it kind of makes me feel like I did something worthwhile with my day. So
were there any teachers in your life who you think impacted your decision to do that? Or is it more I think I'm just going to try to do this thing?
Yeah, I think it's the letter.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow. So you need to be the change that you want to be. That makes sense. Yeah. And you teach fifth graders, mm-hmm. right? How's that been this past year?
I feel like I get asked that question so often. Yeah. And it's kind of hard to just put it into one sentence.
Right.
Or but I think it's challenging for sure. All the brain rot words that they use all day long.
You're so knowledgeable now on modern slang and terminology.
So it's hard to hear, but also I think it's kind of taught me every human wants to be loved. Mm. And I can kind of see that differently in each student. And I think that's pretty unique. And being able to kind of become their safe space as well is something that I don't take for granted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So among the many struggles of teaching, what do you think what would you say is the most difficult aspect of being a teacher? Or one of them? It seems like there's a lot.
I was actually talking to this I was talking with Zoe about this yesterday. I think just the system. I think a lot of teachers talk about the system being so unsupportive.
Dysfunctional, yeah.
Yeah, and just not being ideal or making it almost setting us up for failure. And I think that is kind of true. The more I teach, even though it's just my first year of teaching, I can kind of see there's so many demands that need to be met or they require us to meet. But at the same time, they don't give us the resources or the support to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And also, I think because to have a really good student, there's such a big combination of different factors. So it's kind of hard to say one person is at fault.
Mm.
Parenting is huge.
Sure.
If your kid's a little fart, then it's probably because they're a fart at home. And also at school, there's no consequences for these kids is what I've noticed. At most, they might be sent to the principal's office and they'll get talked to and then they won't get suspended.
Mm.
Or I don't know, just these repeated offenses. I feel like it's just teaching students, I'm going to get away with it as long as I hold out for as long as I can. Because kids are smart and they'll realize, I did this, but there's nothing bad that happened to me. So I'm just going to do it again because
mm-hmm.
I have no consequences. And yeah, I think that's just how discipline just gets worse and worse.
Mm-hmm. So if you were to overhaul one aspect of that chain that you said is broken, would that be more locally, more, one step above hierarchically, to the superintendent level? Where do you think the issue would be best solved by in the short term, short, medium, long term? Or is that too much policy? Or what would best help you even?
I don't know if I can say that.
Okay, that's fair.
I don't know if I
fair.
Can say
that's
my
fair.
Answer.
Yeah.
I just think people need to be wise about how they raise their kids.
Gotcha.
Not that I'm a parent, so I wouldn't know anything, but that, and also I think a lot of the teachers that I work with also talk about how the principal, we use the term they're so far removed from the classroom mm-hmm. because they don't really understand what it's like to be in the classroom anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And because of that, they kind of give suggestions or feedback.
Unrealistic.
On you should try this. But at the same time, like, every class demographic is so different and not everything works for every kid. So I think that's also hard, of just balancing, like, yeah, all of those things.
Yeah. Well, switching gears and into the happier section, what brings you the most joys of teaching then, do you think?
I would definitely say my team. I think I was so blessed in my first year of teaching to have such a good, like, fifth grade team. It's me and then just two other people. So it's a pretty small team and we're all jam-packed at like 25-plus kids. But I think just the connection that we've been able to make with one another, and also the fact that I have such a good teacher mentor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's amazing and she's so knowledgeable. And I think, like, just seeing her passion for teaching, mm-hmm. and also just, like, even though I feel like teachers can kind of, like, cut corners these days, she always has integrity. And mm-hmm. I think her emphasizing that in us is also has been really mm-hmm. beneficial for the both of us.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Do you find yourself excited for, like, future years of teaching? Or after your first year, is it like, oh, man, let's try to get through these years and then try to get to that point where you're comfortable?
I would say, like, when teachers ask me, oh, can you see yourself doing it for, like, four more years? Like, I can't say that I do because I can only think about next week.
Sure, yeah.
And also, I think every year the class is so different. So one year you might have an amazing class, an amazing group of students, and you're like, oh, my gosh, like, teaching is awesome. Like, they actually want to learn. You've seen so much growth, and that can be very encouraging. But then the next year you might get that one student, couple of students that make it really hard. So I think it depends year by year. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're entering your spring break soon, right?
Yeah.
Is that something you're really looking forward to?
Yes. I need that break.
How do you recover during those breaks for yourself? Or do you just, like, just chill for a week?
A lot of laying in bed.
Uh-huh.
Just staring at the ceiling mm-hmm. in silence. Yeah. Not having to hear Miss Choi all day.
Fair.
Is really nice. Also, I think I like to clear my mind by, like, going on walks. I'm trying to get back into running. So I've been, like, running more. So I think that just helps me to kind of, like move my body, but also be able to kind of clear my mind. So
gotcha. That helps. Gotcha. Yeah. Can you give us a brief overview of what a day looks like for you as a teacher? And, you know, including, like, prep work and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm sure you spend more than the 8 hours or whatever doing school-related things. So just for, you know, people who aren't aware of what teachers do.
So school starts technically at 9:15. I wake up around 6:30. And then it's like almost a 20-minute commute for me. So then I try to get to school around like 8:15, 8:30. And then once I get to school, I'm usually, like, cleaning things up from the classroom, like, papers in the turn-in bin. I have to sort that out into the different piles because these kids can't put the papers in the bin correctly, even though they're in fifth grade. And then I have to make copies for the whole day. I thought, like, oh, now kids use, like, Chromebooks these days. I'm not going to make that many copies. I make so many copies in one day. I feel bad for all the trees that we kill. Yeah, so then making copies, making sure I go through all of the slides and the PowerPoint for each subject, since we have to teach all the subjects in one day. Going through all the slides, making sure I know what I'm teaching. Sometimes, yeah, so I Google, how do you teach, blah, 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 blah. I'm guilty. Yeah, but I mean, for the most part, I just try and go through it so I know what I'm going to say.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's also nice when I go through it, I can kind of, like, predict questions that or things that I might have to clarify for the students. And then also sometimes I have meetings in the morning. So we have, like, team meetings. Since it's SOL season, like, we'll have, like, meetings of, like, oh, we're going to use these strategies to teach the kids. So I have to meet with, like, the reading specialist or, like, the math specialist, things like that. Sometimes we have staff meetings. And then after that, kids start coming in around 9. And then around 9:15, we'll actually start school. Do you want me to go through, like, the whole day?
No, you don't have to. Okay. Just, like, briefly.
Yeah. And then school day goes on. Somehow it's 12 and then we go to lunch. And then after that, it's, like, kind of a struggle because we have language arts at the end of the day. So these kids do not want to read. Mm. Yeah.
They're not too tired from the day. And just
oh, they're
read.
So tired. They're like sleeping as they're trying to read the passage. Yeah. And then I get off, or I guess the school day ends at 4:00. And then I'll usually be done by like 4:30. Sometimes we get caught up like talking and debriefing with other teachers. So I like leave the school around 5:00 sometimes. And then usually on the weekends, like on Saturday, I will do some work mm-hmm. to prep for the week. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you do any prep work on weekdays as well for next days?
Sometimes I try to like plan things out. I don't necessarily like go into detail of like, oh, I'm going to do this, 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 but I'll know like what topic for each subject I'm going to teach. And usually like the night before or the day, the morning of that morning time before the students come in, I'll gather all the materials that I need for the day.
Do you ever have to skip lunch because one thing or another?
Yeah. I mean, by the time we drop the kids off and then we get back upstairs, I'll have like 15 minutes mm-hmm. to eat lunch. But sometimes it's like, oh, a kid had a disciplinary issue, so they have to go to the office and we have to sign the kid in and talk to the office lady about, oh, they're going to stay here, blah, blah, blah. And then sometimes it's like other things, like a fight broke out in the lunchroom and then the mm-hmm. lunch lady come or like the cafeteria monitor comes up and they're like, your student did blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, okay.
You just put your hand in your, your palm.
Yeah. So things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you use pre-written lesson plans or is that something you also have to come up with yourself?
It depends on if I'll use it or not, if it's good. Mm-hmm. So like we kind of determine that as a team. So we'll go through like the materials that they give us and then we'll see like, oh, is this really suitable for like the class that we have? And then sometimes you just make adjustments of maybe they'll learn this better if we use this method or things like that.
So if you're ever behind, do you have to like rush to catch up or do you just kind of maintain the pace and hope that you eventually?
That also depends because sometimes we try to combine two things into one day if we do fall behind or we'll just skip it. So mm-hmm. that's also like we have to kind of determine that mm-hmm. as a team.
So I know one thing that really teachers struggle with is getting supplies for their classroom because that's generally out of your guys' pocket, right? There's not too much funds. So how were you able to, I guess, situate that for yourself in this past year?
Amazon wish list. That was really helpful. And also just like the amount of support that I received when I like posted that on like Facebook or Instagram, I think was huge. So I really didn't have to pay for too much out of my own pocket. It was really sweet how my close friends, they gathered money and then they gave me a gift card to like spend on whatever supplies I needed. So that was really appreciated. Even like you and how you donated it. Like a lot to my classroom as well. Like even though I met you for like, I think we knew each other for like, what, 1 or 2 months?
Something like that.
So I think like even that, just like receiving support in ways that I didn't even think about was really beneficial and just being able to prepare myself for my first year.
Awesome. Yeah. It's tough because I'm sure that's a lot of money that needs to be spent on any given year. And if you didn't have those resources, I'm sure it would have been really tough to figure out how to best serve your children, like the kids in your classroom, because they won't have the things that you guys need. Mm-hmm. Right. So how do other teachers do that? Is it just the same thing and they had to community source it, or is there some kind of resource that they could tap into for that?
Community source. Also Eagleview, one thing that's really nice about our school is that there is a church that meets at Eagleview, and they're actually really good at supporting teachers who work at the school. So they're always willing to donate supplies or funds to help our classrooms.
Gotcha.
So that's really nice. Our principal is actually pretty good about always asking us if we need anything. The PTA sometimes supports us with supplies. But I would say for the most part, like teachers love Facebook Marketplace. We try to find as many things as we can there, or even get donations from like teachers who have retired, and then we can get their materials, and we love reusing things too.
Do you have an estimate about how much you've spent of your own money on your classroom or your as just being a teacher?
My own money?
Yeah.
I don't know, honestly. It's not that much. Like, okay. I don't think it's that much.
Good.
Like maybe 300.
Okay. That's a lot.
200? I don't know.
Your own money for
But I had no, I think it's also because since I'm a first year, I had nothing to start with. Yeah. So I had no choice, but yeah.
Right. That makes sense. So, Michelle, I think one thing that teachers have to manage that people might not realize is your relationship with the parents of your students as well, right? So what would an ideal relationship look like between you and parents of a child? How would you like to best partner with them, I guess? And what would, if like in an ideal world, right, they're the optimal, what would that look like in terms of helping you and helping the student?
I would say,
and I guess what I'm, one thing I want to clarify would be like, this could be for the parents of CCPC. How could they best support their own teachers for their kids? Because honestly, like, they probably, you know, want to go to the meetings, but they don't want to be overburdening. They don't want to be too much. They don't want to be too little. So what would be good in general for them?
I would just say to have interest in your child's education. I think that's what I have a lack of in the parents of my students. But one thing that I do feel really supported by is almost if they validate like, oh, we see the same behaviors at home. And they were kind of able to communicate that with one another and like understand, oh, I'm not saying your kid is bad by any means, but I think like sometimes they just make the bad choices. So how can we work together at school and at home to be able to correct those behaviors and to steer them in making better decisions for themselves? So whenever they're very supportive and like, oh, we'll talk to them at home, things like that, I think I appreciate that. Sometimes they say that they will and then they don't follow through.
Sure.
And that shows at school. So I think that's kind of hard. But just making sure like, yeah, your kids grow up to be kind people. I think that's something that starts at home too. And something I try to teach my students, because sometimes I tell them like, you don't have to be the smartest kid, but I at least want you to be a better person than when you first walked in. Mm. Like, that's the bare minimum that I would expect from my students. So, yeah.
That's great. When do you think a parent should be more or less involved in the classroom itself? Or do you think it should be mostly done at home and then let you do kind of do what you're supposed to do?
I think that also depends on the teacher. Because for me, I think it's hard for me to delegate things. So it would be really nice if like there was a parent, like a, I know schools have like room parents and our school does that too, where they're like, oh, okay, like if the teacher needs anything, like they'll come in and like sort papers for like Wednesday folders, or they'll plan events, like Christmas parties for the kids or whatever. I think that's helpful. But at the same time, like, because it's my first year, I don't know the waters too well.
Sure.
Of like, oh, we need to do this, this, this. So it's kind of hard for me to say like, oh, I need help in this. Like, I don't realize I need help in it until like later on.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel like it's weird that every year is going to be completely different for you, that your students, parents, even maybe staff around you is going to be generally completely different from fall to summer?
Yeah, honestly, that terrifies me. Because like, I feel like at the end of the year, like, okay, I finally have a good grip on these kids. Like,
right.
I understand them. And I feel like we've built that relationship, and then they move on to the next grade. And then then I have to start over with like a whole new group of kids. And also like teachers love to talk about like, oh, you need to watch out for that one in fourth grade.
Sure.
He's coming up soon. So things like that, like it's kind of hard knowing like, usually we talk about like the more behavior students, but I think it's also like, sometimes they're like, oh, you have like a really sweet group of kids. So like just being able to know what's coming is helpful, but I think it is scary knowing that they're not the same kids that I had the previous year.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you get nervous, or did you, I guess it was only your first year, but like the first week and just, you know, they're kids, but at the same time, they're like new kids to you.
Oh, I was so nervous.
Yeah.
I think I'm also a very shy person. So when I just remember like my first week, like even for morning meeting, I'd be like, so like, what should we talk about? So I don't know, like things like that where it's like, I'm not really in like that teacher mindset. So I can't pull things like out of thin air of like, oh, let's play this game, or like, let's do this icebreaker, or like whatever. I feel like veteran teachers are very good at coming up with, oh, these activities really help break the ice for kids, so we're going to use that. Like I didn't have that knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I think it was hard in the beginning. But also kids are pretty simple. Like they just need to play a game and then they'll open up. So
what's a good game / icebreaker that you've learned / developed?
So we have this one game. I just say like the detective game, but basically you choose one detective who goes out of the room. And there's one person who's like the liar, quote unquote. And they have to come up with two different statements. So like there'll be two rounds and every other student has to say the same thing twice. So they'll be like, I had cereal for breakfast. So then that's like round one. And then round two, they would have to say the same thing. But then for the liar, they'll say, I went on a walk with my dog. And then the detective in the middle, when they come back into the room, they have to figure out who is like the liar. Mm. So they have to kind of like remember who said what.
Mm.
So they really like that.
Dang, that sounds like a lot of thinking for yeah. fifth graders. Yeah. But do you think that calms them down or excites them? But it's like something that just makes them cohesive.
They like to get silly with it. So they'll gotcha. Be like, oh, I walked my fish and then my dog ate my fish.
Yeah.
Like they'll say something like that. And I'm like, okay, next person. And like, I try to make, I'm like, you need to keep it short because you're not going to remember what you said.
Right.
And half the time they don't remember what they said because they said a really long statement and they mixed all these things. And then they're sitting there going, and I say, I told you so because now you don't remember. Yeah.
That's cute. That's cute. Yeah. So, last question for teaching, but you know, going into your summer break, are you really looking, I'm sure you're looking forward to
oh,
that.
Yeah.
what does it mean for you to have a good break from teaching?
No kids.
No kids.
Yeah, no kids. I can't imagine like, well, at least in my first year, I can't imagine doing like summer school or like summer camps. I feel like it's good to kind of get away from all of that and just be able to like, because I hang out with kids all day, sometimes when I hang out with adults, it feels like weird.
Sure.
Like I don't belong.
Like, hey, how are you?
It's not even like, yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's almost like our humor is different because now yeah, it's like gotcha. My humor is like a fifth grader.
Yeah. You don't have brain rot humor yet?
No, like I don't think like Skibidi is funny. Yeah, no, I don't think that's it. But sometimes like the things that they say is kind of funny. So like a lot. But things like that, I think it's nice to kind of interact with adults and also just traveling, getting to see new places, because as a teacher, your schedule is very restricted to just like breaks where you can travel or go do other things. So I think that's also something I'm looking forward to.
Sounds great. Thanks, Michelle. It's been great hearing about teaching a little bit. I know it's just such a foreign world to a lot of us because our last experience in a school was like decades ago. But yeah, I think it's great to hear teachers' perspective on a lot of that stuff. But one last thing we like to end our podcast with is just talking about how someone who's influenced you in your spiritual walk over the years. And maybe an anecdote if you have one. So is there anyone who you'd really like to just shout out at this time?
I would say probably my two closest friends, Mary and Christine. You're welcome. I said your names. I don't know if they'll ever listen to it, but, I would say for sure they've influenced my spiritual walk immensely. I have been pretty close with them since freshman year of college. So this is like what my sixth year of knowing them, pretty closely. And I would say they've seen the most changes in me as a person. And also, they've challenged me the most. Mm. Yeah, I would say they're both pretty different from me, personality-wise. But I think that's what has been challenging. And kind of like, sorry, I lost my train of thought. Yeah, so because they know me pretty well, I think they're able to rebuke me in ways that I wasn't comfortable with previously. Mm. But the more I've heard it from them, the more I've become... Or the more easily I can accept those things, and kind of try to take the advice that they give me or the ways that they challenge me and actually apply it to my own life. Yeah.
Do you have any specific story that comes to mind? Doesn't have to be about rebuke or anything, but just how you guys have walked with each other as sisters. You know, just be day to day. Maybe they helped you during a time where you needed help, or they helped point you to God in a specific way, or made you read the Bible or something?
I would say, I just remember one time, like, at the start of this school year, so I would say, like, what, like, October, November, around that time, moving back home was kind of hard for me, just because, like, with my parents, and just navigating me being an adult, but still their child at home, and also trying to be a first-year teacher. All of those things was just, like, really challenging and a lot to handle. And also, Christine is in dental school. This is her first year of dental school. So that was also really overwhelming for her. And Mary has been working for more than a year. So I think she was okay with where she was. But I just remember, like, I was talking with Mary because I wanted to vent and say, like, oh, like, my dad is, like, making me feel so, like, frustrated because he just doesn't understand, like, what I'm saying. Mm. I mean, I feel like he's always like, oh, I'm right because I'm your dad. Mm. And, like, you know, all those things. And I was, like, venting to Mary. And then we ended up calling Christine. And we were just, like, we ended up, like, Christine and I were, like, crying together because we were just, like, overwhelmed with the things that we had to deal with. And also just, like, we understood the struggle for one another. Mary didn't cry because she's not a crier. So she just kind of sat there laughing at us. But I think just even moments like that where I'm able to kind of let myself be myself in front of them just feels very comforting, knowing that I don't have to always act strong or tough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that they know me for who I am and they love me for who I am. I think that just makes me feel seen and loved. So. Yeah.
That's great. Thanks for sharing, Michelle. And thanks for getting on. I know it's tough to just talk about yourself for like 30 minutes, but you did a great job. Yeah. Hope you enjoyed. But yeah, thanks to you guys for watching and we'll catch you guys next time.
Bye.